originating from our Jimmy John's of Lexington studios. This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
But it was all for Chuck McGee. Super Sabre wins the Derby for Todd Fletcher.
Basalt will give trainer Steve Asmussen career win number 6,000.
It was all have another for Doug O'Neill.
Oxbow and D-Wayne Lucas. Trainer D-Wayne Lucas, a sixth win.
And Al's Rosie is going to give trainer Gary Contessa his 2,000th career win.
And Dialed In never got to them. It was Animal Kingdom for Graham Motion.
Steve Hobby with career victory number 1,000 at Oaklawn.
Now here's Mike Penna and Jude Feld.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to the show Trainers Listen To. It is indeed Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton, and it's right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. I'm Mike Penna alongside my usual entry mate on the program. He is retired trainer Jude Feld, Pontiff of the Pick Four, and we are once again in our Jimmy John's of Lexington broadcast studios and extending a special welcome to everyone joining us throughout North America on Sirius 219 XM Channel 206, and those of you tuning in on our website, on your smartphone, tablet, computer, whatever it might be, you're doing that through horseracingradio.net, and happy to have you with us. JT, I think it's important to note as we start the program here tonight that an important programming change, which is upcoming beginning tomorrow, that is March 22nd, and it will begin with our Express Bet radio program tomorrow at 3 Eastern. For those of you who listen to us on Sirius XM, your Sirius channel, 219, will not change. But on XM, if you listen to us on XM radio, that channel shifting from 206 to 201 beginning tomorrow, and that also affects this program looking ahead to next week, too. All of our shows will start being aired on XM 201 beginning tomorrow.
Yeah, I noticed when I was doing the press release, they changed the channels exactly on the same day last year.
Was it the same day?
Exactly.
No kidding.
Yes. So that must be their system.
I went ahead and sent Sirius a picture of our pocket schedules that we just had printed with all of the tune-in information. and I said to them, I said, I'm beginning to think that these pocket schedules are kind of like the Madden video game curse when you end up on the cover. Because the minute we print them, the channel changes.
Right. Well, remember next year, 22nd. That's
the day. Do not
print
anything.
Do
until
not
after.
Print or find out from them where you're going.
Right, correct.
They could tell you earlier, I'm sure. This is not something they decided on yesterday.
Correct.
Although that's when we found out about it.
Well, we're letting you know now. As of tomorrow, for those of you that tune in on XM Radio, it will be XM 201 as opposed to 206 that you're listening to now. And again, the Sirius channel will not change. So Sirius 219, XM 201 is your new home for the Horse Racing Radio Network and all of our programming beginning tomorrow. All right, with that out of the way, I want to introduce you to tonight's guest. And tonight's guest, how about this? This is the cool thing about Trainer Talk. Tonight's guest has never saddled a starter in the Kentucky Derby or a Triple Crown race. She has never led her own horse into the paddock before a Breeders' Cup race or any graded stakes for that matter. And as a matter of fact, she has saddled only one winner in her very young training career. And when you hear her story, you're going to realize quite quickly just how much that win meant to her. I also think it's important to point out that tonight's guest also served in the United States Navy for more than 2.5 decades. So as we welcome trainer Tina Chamberlain to Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton, we want to start by saying, Tina, thank you for your service, Lieutenant Commander, and welcome to the show.
Well, thank you very much. I'm very excited to be a part of this.
Yeah, it's a privilege for us to be able to visit with somebody as decorated as yourself and somebody who spent so much time serving our troops all over the world. And now to get a chance to hear your story about retiring from the Navy and making a transition into training racehorses. Why would anybody want to do that, Tina?
I started riding when I was a kid. My mom taught me how to ride when I was 4 years old. And so I've been riding my whole life, and I've had horses throughout my whole Navy career. And I remember her telling me I would watch horse racing every chance we could. Now, granted, when I grew up, that wasn't as much as it is now, so it was a little less. And so I was glued to the TV every chance I could watch anything on a horse. And then my grandfather made the fatal mistake of taking me to see the Black Stallion. And from then it was done. I wanted to be a jockey and never was going to see that goal simply because I was never going to be small enough. So as I progressed in my naval career, I stayed in the horse racing, not horse racing, but the horse business and industry, and learned as much as I could from anybody I could talk to teaching me something that I could trade work for. I mean, cleaning stalls, grooming, anything. And then after I retired, knowing that, you know, not coming from a family that had horses all the time, I knew that if I stayed my Navy career, then I could own my own farm someday because I'd have retirement income coming in and I could foot my own bill.
That's a tremendous plan. And we had Mick Ruiz on this broadcast a few weeks ago. As you know, he trains Bolt Oro, and he was a guy that did a lot of work ahead of his training career, and now he's out on his own. And that's a good way to do it. I mean, to plan ahead, because horse racing takes a lot of money, a lot of time, and it's really a lifestyle. So talk about the difference between being in the Navy and being a horse trainer.
Being in the Navy, I actually started learning, started in the Navy by fixing airplanes, from electronics to body work. So that's, you know, where I started in the Navy, and I owned horses off and on throughout my career, initially when I was younger, because I joined at 18. So I, you know, found there was a base stables in California. I was stationed at Moffett Field. And they had a little base stables where people who owned horses could keep their horses out there. And first thing I did was found somebody that needed some help feeding and working, riding their horses for them when they couldn't get out there due to their Navy career. And so I kept at it while I was in. And then I was fixed airplanes for the first 15 years as an enlisted person and deployed a couple different times. And then I went, and we called it crossing to the dark side. I went to school to become a nurse because the Navy needed so many nurses with the upcoming transition and the going to war, you know, with Iraq. And so I volunteered to become a nurse and got a degree in nursing, and then went back full-time active duty after school and worked at hospitals and deployed overseas being a nurse. So in same time frame, I kept on plugging away, and I had two horses at that time when I was doing that. So I kept my riding skills up the best I could, and kept, you know, reading. I mean, Blood Horse was my best friend. I had a subscription, and any book that I could get my hands on, I got, you know, Carl Nasker's book was awesome and kept me motivated. And I mean, just anything that had anything to do with horse racing, between trying to get it on the internet, to learn about it from reading, from talking to people. While I was in school in Oklahoma becoming a nurse, there was a training stables that was in Moore, Oklahoma, and I don't unfortunately remember the name, but there was a bunch of quarter horse trainers out there that they saw me plugging away at this. I had this 9-month-old thoroughbred I'd picked up and was working on getting him trained, and they offered to help me out to get my trainer's license in Oklahoma. And so we swapped. I rode their horses for them, and they taught me everything I needed to know to get my trainer's license. So that was my actual first license in 2003. I got from the steward at Remington Park, and was probably, I don't think I smiled so much than that first day, other than that first win I got with Fairway Lane. So.
Yeah, that had to be a pretty special day. You know, Tina, you mentioned reading Carl Nasker's book, and we've had trainers come on this program in the past, and they'll talk about either learning from other trainers or looking up to other trainers. You didn't necessarily work for another trainer, but you read that book early on. What was it about Carl's book and some of the things that you pulled out of it that really impacted you?
Keep trying. I mean, he said basically he did everything backwards. You know, when he was in rodeo and Then he bought his brood stock and made his own horses, basically. I mean, the short story of it, and then trained his horses that he bred, and he never quit. He never gave up, and he followed what he wanted to do, and it paid off. Granted, I think I'm a little older than he was when he started his horse racing endeavor, but it perseverance and just don't quit, and you know, look at the big picture and know that if you keep trying, you'll get there eventually.
Yeah, he still hasn't quit. Every once in a while, he'll pull himself out of mothballs and take a horse, you know, which is cool. I mean, I think it's great. I don't think trainers should ever retire. I think they should die with their boots on. You know, I think it's the kind of sport where you know, you can continue to do it if you can afford to do it on your own. Because what happens to old trainers a lot of times is that their clients pass away and then they're stuck with nothing. So, but if you can afford to at least have one horse, I think it's great. It keeps you healthy. All the walking that you do every morning and it keeps your mind going, because there's always you know, races to handicap and condition books to read and things like that. I think it's a great sport to be involved in. You mentioned earlier, and this has been on my mind since you said it, but you know, you think of the cavalry and the army, but you don't really think of horses in the Navy. I mean, you have to have some pretty special horses to gallop on the water. And it was so interesting to me that in California, they had that facility for people that had horses. Is that a common thing in the Navy, that people have horses? Are there other facilities like that around the country?
No, it's not as common as it used to be. I'm pretty sure that particular base I was stationed on for the Navy was the only one that I remember having an actual stable on base. And since it was maybe 5 years after I changed duty stations that base was sold back to the Air Force or NASA. I can't remember which one specifically, but it's no longer even a Navy base. It's called Onizuka Air Force Base, or it was 10 years ago the last time I looked it up. But the only other place that I remember having a stable was Millington, Tennessee, which was where we used to. Now, Millington is now a big hub for where they do the personnel stuff, and they pay records and monitor all the different records that go in and go out of the Navy personnel detachment. But there used to be a stable there that you could rent horses and ride trails all out in Millington, Tennessee. And since they moved all the schoolhouses down to Florida, I don't believe that stable's there anymore either. But those are the only two places in the Navy that I was aware of that actually had, you know, stables. Anywhere else I was at didn't have, you know, base stables that I was aware of.
That's fascinating. And then the other thing I wanted to ask you, You became a nurse. That's kind of through the goodness of your own heart, because you liked what you were doing in the Navy fixing airplanes, but you wanted to participate at a level where you were, you know, needed, and I think that's great. Has that helped you in taking care of horses, you know, having a little bit of a medical background?
Yes, it has. It's actually been very beneficial. Even though the size and some of the placement of things are quite different from people to horses, the theory is still very similar. So being able to do a lot of, you know, if I get an injury, until I can get a horse to the vet or the vet can get out here, I can stabilize that injury a lot similar in the same similar manner as you would a human. So in that part, it's helped a lot. I had a mare that got an injury near her jugular in her neck, and fortunately, knowing that was the jugular groove, before we transported her, we were able to make sure that we could stabilize the area to keep her from possibly bleeding to death. So that was very beneficial. At least I could come up with some ideas on how to keep her from injuring herself further until we could get her to the vet.
Talking with trainer Tina Chamberlain here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. She's joining us from her farm in Allert, Tennessee, and saddled her first winner back in mid-February, February 15th at Turfway Park. We're going to talk more about that moment coming up throughout the program. But Tina, before we get to that, and I don't mean to bury the lead with you saddling your first winner, but fascinating when you talk about your career in the Navy and trying to stay involved with horses on some level. When you were deployed in areas like Afghanistan, Iraq, and Japan, and Singapore, and all over the world, was it challenging to try to keep your eye on the prize and try to stay involved or at least follow the sport and follow horses at that point?
It was. That's where a lot of my family would try and send me different books that they could get a hold of. And granted, the majority of my family doesn't know a whole lot about horses other than my mom, and nobody really knows anything about horse racing other than what they see on TV. So some of my books that they'd send were not even pertaining to race horses, but at least I could, you know, training a horse and using vast experience, sometimes you got to think outside the box. So, you know, sometimes what works for a barrel racing horse to condition that horse can help, you know, get a thoroughbred racehorse out of a slump. So I got a variety of books from my family to try and stay in just horse training in general. And, but yeah, it was definitely a challenge, but I knew that at the end I would get there, and it would just be maybe a little bit longer or a little bit harder than I expected, but I've never done anything the easy way, so I figured why start now.
Were you able to watch races when you were overseas?
No, we didn't. They have a lot better availability through the internet now than when we did, but when we had I think it's called AFN, Air Force Network, and I don't remember them ever broadcasting any sort of horse racing or horse related shows whatsoever. So most of, you know, I'd get some letters from my family telling me if I was deployed during the Kentucky Derby, and they'd try and, you know, send me a VHS tape or something that I could watch it on. But other than that, it wasn't, you know, I'd have to catch up on everything when I got back home.
See, you should have been listening to the radio. Our first couple of years broadcasting the Kentucky Derby, well, I guess it was probably after you got out, but we were actually broadcasting on AFN and providing the coverage on radio to servicemen and women all over the world, and that was quite an honor.
Oh, wow, yeah, I didn't know about that. That would have been awesome.
Yeah, it's really cool sometimes to hear from the servicemen and women who listen to the show, and it's their only link to horse racing, so that's always cool. Did you get to any international racing? Like, did you get off the ship to go to racing in Japan or any place like that?
I spent 6 months in Misawa, Japan, and when we were over there, there wasn't anything close by, and at the time, I think I was 19 when I was stationed over there, and I didn't even realize Japan had a racetrack. So at the point in time when I was over in Japan, I didn't have that opportunity, just because I didn't even know they raced thoroughbreds over there at that point in time.
You know, Tina, horse racing's not the most popular sport in the world, right? I mean, it doesn't rank up there with, say, the NFL or Major League Baseball, but it's still a popular sport. What did your fellow servicemen and women think of you having such an interest in horse racing?
Oh, they thought it was really neat. Everybody that, you know, that could, and when I had horses at home or at, you know, at a stable while I was deployed, they'd come back and they'd want to bring their kids to do pony rides or come visit and see a lot of them hadn't even seen a horse in person, so they'd see if they could stop by and touch a horse. And then they all rooted for me. They're like, well, when you do this, don't forget about us. So it was always, everybody was always very supportive and thought it was a unique but really, really awesome goal to have. And following a dream was actually the bigger thing. They were, you know, you're going to do that? I'm like, yeah, it's my dream. I'm going to get there. I've got to, that's what, you know, why we're fighting for freedoms and doing what we're doing is so people can follow their dreams and live life the way they want to. And so that was the cool thing that everybody supported, was that I was following my dream.
Tell me a little bit about your farm that you're joining us from right now, but it's Alert, Tennessee, if I'm not mistaken.
Mm-hmm. Yes, we have my husband and I have a 30-acre farm. We built it. I mean, there are houses on it, but we've pretty much built everything that's here ourselves. We've got 5 pastures, and in those pastures, we've got like other 3 stall mini barns, kind of. So we've got stalls for horses to get in out of this. Well, we have snow right now, out of the snow and rain, and then we've got a good sized pond that I'm hoping to turn into a swimming pool rehabilitation for injured race horses. And we're working on getting a indoor arena built. We're plugging away at our goals for that. And we've got 6 that five that I'm going to be starting this year. They've been under saddle for 30 days previously, but then I went to horseshoeing school for 9 months, and so now I'm going to get them tuned up come the spring and get them ready to head to the track, hopefully, at least to start doing some breathing and see what they're made of. They're still kind of all green, so... But I start all my own and saddle them and ride them and get all their basics down.
It sounds like you're going to shoe them now, too, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the goal. At least if the plan is to shoe them, but I do have a farrier that the reason why I went to farrier school. His name's Justin Court, and when I take him up to Kentucky, he may still do it for me. I will have realized that I'm not as young as I used to be.
Well, that's tough no matter what age you are, but it's great. It's great to go to horse shoeing school because the horse's foot is so important, and it's a good thing to know, even if you don't do it yourself. It's a great bit of knowledge to have in your back pocket as you're training. I think that's fantastic. I just don't know where you get the 36 hours a day that you live in that nobody else does.
Little sleep.
Yeah, I can imagine that. She is trainer Tina Chamberlain, just getting started with her training career after serving more than 2.5 decades in the U.S. Navy. And as you can tell, she is focused, she is determined, and she is on her way up after saddling her first career winner, which we are going to talk about coming up here shortly. Tina, you mentioned your husband, Todd, and you mentioned having the farm in Tennessee, and he kind of helps you out with a lot of the things around the farm. How actively involved is he with your training operation?
Well, the 9 months I spent in horseshoeing school, he ran the whole farm and took care of all our horses. And so I've only mentioned the 6 that I have starting under saddle and getting them ready to start breathing. But we actually have 17 horses. So he one's currently at Turfway Park. He's one of, hopefully we'll be in the winner's circle tomorrow night as well. But his name's Stringtown. But besides him, we have 16 on the farm. And we have two stallions and 5 brood mares, and then the 6 younger ones that I'm going to be getting ready to try and see if they're going to be able to race or not. So he's all in. If it was Texas Hold'em, every ounce and every penny he has, he's put in. So
what a great husband to have, huh?
Oh yeah, he is. I wouldn't. I can't. He's. If it wasn't for him, I maybe even longer before I got a saddle a winner. But if not, it would be, I'd probably be 90 before I'd be getting anything done. But yeah, he's I can't ask for a better man or a better husband that's been here for me the whole time.
Tina, what brought the two of you together? Was it the Navy? Was it horses? Or was it something totally unrelated?
Well, he's a retired Marine. So we met when I was stationed in 29 Palms, and there was a place that on base that's called, they call it the Staff Club, and they have served meals there. And so that's, we used to shoot pool and eat dinner at the same location. And then we became friends, and then I deployed and he deployed, and so lost touch. Stayed in contact via email here and there about various military things, because we both had a pretty good knowledge base when it came to our specialties. And then after he retired, we started dating, and then we got married.
And there you have it, the military power couple, right? And by the way, please say thank you to Todd for his service to our country as well. And but what a great story, and to see where it has ended up here today, and excited to hear or to see where it might be going too, Tina. You know, the future is, it's just the possibilities are endless. This is so cool.
Well, thank you. We're excited.
Well, it's so rare that people are able to do this, you know, especially, you know, as you get older, it's really got to be gratifying that you finally reached the point where you could do this after being so patient and working so hard to realize that. It's got to really be gratifying.
It is. It's an amazing, just being able to wake up every morning, and there's nothing like it.
Talking with Tina Chamberlain here on Trainer Talk, presented by Phasic Tipton. Tina, only about 1 minute or so left before we have to get to our break at the bottom of the hour here. But I did want you to touch on your children. Are they actively involved in the operation too?
No. Well, my daughter and my son live in Missouri. They're grown. And then one of the things that I didn't realize at the time, but Todd and I, we have two other children. But unfortunately, we don't have children together married, but his children are from his previous marriage. So we have a total of four children and three grandchildren. And my children are grown and doing their own thing. My daughter's actually in college, working on trying to become a doctor or a pediatrician. And my son's down in Arkansas, going to start college for a seminary. And then his son's getting ready to graduate high school. And then our daughter, Brooke, is getting ready to start high school next year. So we've got four between us.
Wow, and somehow they keep the ball rolling on the training side of things, too. It's an incredible story. We're visiting with Tina Chamberlain here on Trainer Talk, presented by Phasic Tipton. We're going to get to a quick commercial break. When we come back, I promise you, we're going to talk about that first career winner and watching that horse by the name of Fairway Lane cross the line first at Turfway Park on February 15th. That's up next, right here on Trainer Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
The Phasic Tipton Gulfstream Sale. Join us Florida Derby Week at the nation's premier destination for selected two-year-olds in training. From Kentucky Derby winner Nyquist to recent stars like Dreamtree, More Spirit, Audible, and Mopetism, Gulfstream grads are hotter than ever. This year's sale boasts quality from top to bottom and an under-tax show held over Gulfstream's dirt racetrack. Selected sales, superior results. The Phasic Tipton Gulfstream Sale, March 28th. Where will you be?
Bloom Racing.
Majestic City could also still do it, and here he comes.
Majestic City running a big one.
Started by former jockey and 35-year racing industry veteran Jeffrey Bloom, Bloom Racing offers racing partnerships, bloodstock services, pinhooking, and private race management.
Soul Driver the leader, though. Soul Driver in front.
Experience the fun, excitement, and exclusive access of racehorse ownership with Bloom Racing. Forming racing partnerships now. Get in on the action at bloomracing.com.
It all started with a dream. A dream to be the best. To breed the best. To race the best.
Super Saver Ross Amayan, what a finish to the class.
And to stand the best. Windstar Farm, dedicated to the dream.
A leader in turf racing across North America, Woodbine, one of the world's most dynamic gaming, racing, and entertainment companies, returns for championship thoroughbred horse racing in April. Committed to racing excellence and innovation, Woodbine is proud to offer the Graded Stakes Bonus Program for the 2018 racing season, allowing horsemen and women alike more opportunities to race against the best of the best. Woodbine continually strives to bring the most competitive and high-quality fields to the horse racing community and to its fans, and with this offer, now is your chance to race with champions. Owners, trainers, and horses come for the action and excitement. They come for the finest in hospitality treatment and dining. They come for the competitive purses. They come to Woodbine, the Northern Gem, transcending the sport of racing today for tomorrow. To learn more about the Graded Stakes Competition Bonus, call the Woodbine Race Office today.
This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
It's Bossa Flow just narrowly from Kiss My Note. Here's Fairway Lane, switched off cover into the four path and is gaining good ground. As they run to the top of the stretch, Kiss My Note emerges with lead. But it's Fairway Lane on the wrong lead, but advancing and coming up to collar. It's Kiss My Note in Fairway Lane, shoulder to shoulder, stride for stride. In Fairway Lane, and the Bug Boy takes a narrow advantage. Kiss My Note fighting on down to the wire. Fairway Lane. Getting it done by just about a head. Kiss My Note was second, then came Bossa Flow, and a photo for fourth between JK's Country and Michi Bra. 59-3 was the running time. Photo for win.
Welcome back to Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton here on HRRN. Mike Penna, Jude Feld, in our Jimmy Johns of Lexington broadcast studios. And happy to have you with us, everyone listening throughout North America on Sirius XM Satellite Radio. Don't forget, if you missed the early portion of the show, we told you about a very important programming note. The Sirius XM channels, well, one of them will be changing starting tomorrow with our Express Bet radio show on March 22nd. We will still be on Sirius 219, the same channel you're listening to now. But for XM listeners, you're listening to 206 at the moment. That channel, beginning tomorrow, will now change to XM 201. So make that note. You will find Horse Racing Radio Network on XM 201 beginning tomorrow, and that will be our new home throughout the year for all of our shows that we bring you throughout the week. And of course, you can always head to our website, horseracingradio.net, to check out the Sirius XM information for all of our programs throughout the year, horseracingradio.net, and listen to us live on our website as well.
Yes, because sometimes they change, and sometimes we don't know about it till late.
They do. So best advice we can give to people, right?
I always tell people that they contact me, because a lot of times I don't even know they've changed. You don't even know they've changed. And I said, just keep scrolling until you find us. We're on there somewhere. But if you check the website, it's a lot easier. And most of the time, when we are aware, you are aware.
Yep.
So it's not an exact science, satellite radio.
But we are visiting with trainer Tina Chamberlain on the program tonight, and what a story she is. After serving 26 years in the U.S. Navy and always wanting to be involved with horse racing, she retires, decides to become a horse trainer, and she is just getting started with her career. You just heard the call of Fairway Lane getting up to win the fourth race at Turfway Park on February 15th. That was the first and so far only winner for Tina Chamberlain. More to come, no doubt. But Fairway Lane, a tremendous effort that night. And Tina, I know that had to be a special night for you, but you were just telling us the story off air that you weren't even at Turfway for the race.
No, I was in the emergency room at the VA hospital in Lexington.
What happened?
Earlier that day, I was having some chest pain, and so I was a little worried. It wasn't anything I'd had before that was, felt normal, like a muscle pull or anything. So I drove myself to the emergency room, and they started running a bunch of tests, and I had some numbness and tingling in the left side of my face. And so then they noticed I had some symptoms that looked like possible stroke signs. So they ran further testing and kept me overnight, and released me the next day. But they t- told me pretty much I had had a mini stroke, and but no heart attack. So,
and silver lining.
let me go and just, you know, said, keep, you know, be, we don't know why you had it, but it is something that, you know, if you can get some more family history, or but start taking your baby aspirin and come back if it happens again.
Well, I assume they probably didn't have TVG in your hospital room at the VA. So how were you able to keep up with the race, or were you able to keep up with it live?
I, at the time that they had the race, I wasn't able to keep up with it live because technically you're not supposed to have your cell phone in your hospital room. So I was trying to be a good patient after having been a nurse. I didn't turn my phone on. I kept it, the ringer down so I could stay in contact with my husband because he was still in Tennessee managing the farm, and I didn't tell him until it was too late to drive out there that I was staying overnight. So, but once I got the phone call from the lady at Turfway Park that wanted to do an interview, that's when she told me we won. I then watched the ride. I cheated, and I called the nurse in and asked if it was okay if I could turn my cell phone up for a little bit and watch something, and explained what was going on. And he was very kind and said, oh, by all means, go ahead, and we'll just, you know, we'll make sure that it doesn't mess with any of the monitors, which it never has in the past when I was still being a nurse. So, but there's always new technology that does new things that can mess some of the monitors up. So, but that's how I found out.
I can imagine her heart rate watching Fairway Lane come down the stretch might have messed with some of the monitors.
Yeah, well, could have been possibly fatal if she was. That's the problem with training horses. You get so keyed up sometimes, and you know, it can put a little bit of stress on you. It takes a while to get used to that, you know, and you never do, I don't think, ever become devil may care about a race. A lot of trainers say if you don't, you know, have butterflies, then it's maybe time for you to change careers.
Yeah.
And I think that's true. I mean, the horses are always, you know, on your mind when you're in charge of them, and you want them to run well when they run. So it can be a little stressful, but you know, that you don't want to. Jeez, that's the whole concept is a little frightening, actually.
Talk about watching the replay on your phone, Tina.
I was at least in the right place. I was going to have a heart attack at all then. when the lady called and you know, she was the news handles the news feed and stuff for the Turfway Park, and you know, asked me some questions and how I felt, and I immediately started watching, and then the nurse came back in to make sure I was okay because I did spike my heart rate. I was trying not to yell, as even though I knew it was a replay, but was extremely excited and called my husband, and then we sat and cried because we were so happy that we won.
That's great. What an emotional day, huh? I can't even imagine. That's wild. That's absolutely wild. And like I told you off the air, you know, it sounds like the story of your life. You still didn't get to see the race live. You're always catching up via tape.
Yeah.
Tina, how many times have you watched that replay?
Oh, okay. More times than I can even remember to count. I just if there's a day where it seems like it's like we had a week and a half worth of rain, and it ended up turning into a absolute soup sandwich mud pit out here, and so we got a little sad about, you know, okay, we're behind schedule. We played that replay and we went out in the mud and played.
You know, that's funny. Jude, you would oftentimes say that about your career when maybe things weren't going all that well for you and you were in a little bit of a slump. You would go back and watch some of the moments that were kind of the high notes and some of those big races, and it would bring you back to where you needed to be.
Yeah, Freya Stark and Larry Colmus.
Yeah.
When I'd get depressed about, you know, being in a losing streak or things weren't going good, I'd put this tape in of Freya Stark, which was a filly that I bought in Ireland, and Larry Colmus called her when she won the California Oaks, which was a grade 3 $200,000 race, and that would always remind me that I knew what I was doing, that I just needed to stay the course, and that tape helped me through a few slumps many times. Larry knows that. He knows that's my favorite race call and my favorite race. But yeah, you need those things because sometimes it gets pretty depressing and things just don't go your way. But if you just hang in there, I guess that's back to Carl Nafsker's book, right?
Yeah.
If you just keep doing what you're doing, you'll be all right.
Tina, was part of the emotion that you experienced, I mean, obviously it's great that you trained your first winner and the horse crosses the line first and all of those things, but is part of that emotion vindication that you do know what you're doing and that you can do this and be successful?
Yes, absolutely. The hardest part is realizing that you look at Equibase and there's a girl that really helped me out a lot when I was training at LaGrange before I started at High Point Training Center in LaGrange, Kentucky. Her name's Karen Wittick. She would answer all my dumb questions that I didn't know about the way things had changed from Oklahoma when I was learning from the old quarter horse trainers to coming to Kentucky and trying to learn the differences with the backside and the different, I mean, things in the course of, 12 years, things change. And she, she'd see me in the round pen that looked like a swimming pool working, a horse and getting frustrated. And she'd just keep at it and you'll get there. And that first time you make it to a race, the horse that's racing tomorrow night, he was the actual horse I saddled for the very first time ever to even go to a race, and he came in last, but that was one of the best feelings ever initially, even though I thought I was going to vomit in the paddock trying to saddle him, but we got there. I saddled a horse, he went, he raced, he came in last, but he came back sound. He didn't injure himself in the race, and he could race again. And so that was the initial, carrot dangling. And then we went from that to winning that race on the 15th. And even though to some people it's not a huge victory, it's just one more thing that says, yep, I'm getting there. I've done it. I'm on the right path, and I'm doing it the right way.
Yeah, those stepping stones are important. Every little milestone along the way. I mean, there's very few trainers that saddle the grade one winner in their first start as a trainer. I think Mike McCarthy is the only one I know. I believe he actually saddled a grade one winner in his first start as a trainer, but he had gotten the horse from the owner, was with Pletcher, and I think he actually won a grade one. It was certainly a graded race, but in any case, those stories are very, very few and far between. I mean, most people have to start out at a lower level and work their way up. And it is important that the horse made the race. Even though he ran last, you got some blue sky above. He came back good, and you can get him ready for the next start. And now, maybe he'll win tomorrow night. Has he won since, or is this going to be his second start, or what does he look like in the form?
I think he's got 14 starts total. He's come in third. He raced 2 weeks ago, came in fourth. So a month ago, he came in third. If I remember correctly, he's got 14 starts total. I actually got him from Justin Court, the guy that was shoeing for me in Kentucky, and we rehabbed him here at the farm. They couldn't figure out what was going on with him, so when he sold him to me, we rehabbed him here at our farm in Allert, and then we took him back to the track, and he's been paying his own way, so I can't complain about that.
No, it's good.
Yeah, no, Tina Chamberlain here on Trainer Talk, presented by Phasic Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. A great story of perseverance and keeping your eye on the prize. And when you give a leg up to jockey Perry Utes tomorrow night, who is going to be aboard Stringtown, you're going to give a leg up to a guy who has ridden a gazillion races in his career. He was recently honored by Turfway Park for all of the mounts that he had the privilege to be aboard. Think about that, Tina. You're giving a leg up to a guy like Perry Utes. How cool is that?
That's way cool. We looked at. I mean, the first time I heard of him was 2 years ago at Belterra Park, and we looked him up, and you know, thought, okay, well, what if? And at this time, I was still real green at the how to call the agent and get a jockey to ride your horse process. So, I called Perry's agent, and he's like, "Yeah, we've got him out for that race." So then I talked to a couple different people about how the process works, and I realized, yeah, I gotta get a little bit more under my belt before I can get Perry Utes. Yeah. So, but that's where Mr. Miller, Tyrone Miller, and you know, he's really helped me out a lot in learning about all of this stuff, and he's been around the backside a long time, and so he's instrumental in why we got Mr. Utes.
How about this?
For tomorrow night.
As of the recording.
It's going to be awesome.
Yeah, as of this show here on Wednesday night, Perry Utes has ridden over 50,000 career races, right? 50,036 is where the total stands. Absolutely amazing. The guy's a legend.
Oh, yeah. He's a fantastic rider. When I started in racing, I was at River Downs, which is now Belterra Park. But Perry Utes rode a horse. The first chart that I ever made for the Daily Racing Form was Thanks St. Jude. How about that for a
wow.
for a coincidence? And Perry Utes rode that horse, and I was shaking so badly, partly from doing the chart for the first time, and partly because Thanks St. Jude was winning, and of course I had a few dollars there. and he wins the race. I couldn't get down to the track photographers fast enough to get a picture. I still have a picture of that. And Perry Utes just he's a legendary guy, really. I mean, he should be in the Hall of Fame, and there's a little movement to get that happening, because here's a guy that's ridden a lot of horses for many, many people. He's made many people's lives, really, their dreams come true, and hopefully he can do that for you as well.
I just hope I don't drop him when I give him a leg up.
He's not that big of a guy. You won't have any problem.
Throw him right over the other side. She'll be so excited.
That might be my problem, is throwing him too high. Launch him over the top.
Well, that'll be a great moment for trainer Tina Chamberlain, who is our guest here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton tonight. Perry Utes going to be aboard Stringtown at Turfway Park, and an Indiana-bred son of Mancini. Would be nice to see Stringtown break through with another victory coming up tomorrow night. Tina, I was going to ask you that question. You're talking about maybe dropping him or throwing him too far when you give him a leg up. Is there part of you, when you tell him about Stringtown, since I don't think he's ridden the horse before, is there part of you that says, oh, wow, I'm not worthy, this is Perry Utes? Or is there a part of you that says, you know what, I'm going to tell you how to ride my horse?
I'm kind of stuck in the middle, to be honest. It's kind of like going back when I'm in the middle of trying to do a you show up on scene on a car wreck, and you're okay. You're assessing, and you're trying to figure out who to take care of first. This is a guy that's got more rides, more horse knowledge in a pinky than I probably have in my whole body right now. He's going to do what he needs to do because he's out there to win. I mean, that's obvious by his record. So, and he's got to make split-second decisions. I'm not out there riding. So that's kind of how, you know, I'm kind of stuck between telling him how to ride the horse, or hopefully – you know, he's out there, and if he's riding him, he's probably done a little bit of homework on him, at least I would think. But if he hasn't, you know, but I mean, like I said, he's got more riding knowledge in a pinky than I've got in my entire body when it comes to racing a horse. So I'm kind of just going to play it by ear and see what happens.
See what you feel like at the time. Well, a lot of times the jocks like to know if a horse has any idiosyncrasies. So you don't necessarily have to give him instructions as to what to do in the race, because he probably knows that. But if a horse, if he's a horse that, you know, leans on the bit a little bit or has some idiosyncrasies warming up or whatever, they like to know that going in so they know what to expect and can make the proper adjustments. So that would be my advice. Oh. Not that you asked for it.
Oh, no, that would be great because I might have just gone speechless and stared at him and drooled on him for all I know. So at least I can plan that conversation in my head prior to tomorrow, and because I have ridden Stringtown, not in a flat tack saddle, but I do know that he is a little heavy on the bit when he's feeling good. So,
well, we'll see if Perry can figure it all out for you tomorrow night, Tina. That's going to be a great moment. No doubt we'll be watching and seeing if you can break through again. How about the big horse Fairway Lane? Your lone winner. Where might we see Fairway Lane again?
I'm going to get with Yvonne and see where he recovered very well. So he should be getting ready to run. We're just looking for another good race that'll fit him with his conditions. So just trying to get him set up. But I know with Turfway closing, they don't want to really push him either. And so they may be just saving him to send him because we're looking at going to Ellis next. So when I get down there tomorrow or get up there tomorrow, we'll probably discuss more about him in person and see how he's doing and kind of go from there.
Yeah, you mentioned Yvonne Miller, the owner. Talk a little bit about Yvonne and that relationship.
To be honest, I deal more with Tyrone, her husband. Okay. I've spoken to Yvonne. Like once on the phone when she was getting Tyrone for me. But she's very nice lady and very easy to work with and work for. But Tyrone is who I normally deal with because the horses are more his passion and she loves them, but she knows that he knows a little bit more than she does. So that's who I usually end up dealing with. But the family in general is a wonderful family and, you know, Tyrone and I and my husband Todd are all very good friends and that includes Yvonne as well. So I just don't know her as well as I know Tyrone.
Well, Mike was asking you about Fairway Lane because he doesn't know much about fairways. So,
no, nothing actually. I have no idea what a fairway is, but that's okay. That's why I gave up on golf a while back.
I beat the ball into submission for golf. So.
I just completely gave it up. Tina, what's the most important lesson that you've learned over these past few months of training horses?
People that have helped me, whether I've done something right or done something wrong, and how to look at a horse, talk to a jock, interact with people on the backside. I've learned something from everybody. Sometimes I've learned what I shouldn't do. Sometimes I've learned what I could do better. But everybody that I have dealt with, which, I mean, there's several people that have really helped me out and asked or answered some of my dumb questions. But it's been a dream come true, and I couldn't have done it without all the people that have helped me.
Yeah,
and the fact that I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No. I finish your thought.
Oh, it's just been a wonderful with not having, you know, dealt with the actual racing community in general until the past few years. I mean, everybody has been wonderful from the different people that have, you know, the Millers and my shoer that inspired me to go to the horseshoeing school and, you know, Miss Wittick and Donnie Grego. I mean, all these people, Dallas Stewart, who gave me a ride in his car when I was walking down the tunnel at Kentucky at Churchill Downs. You know, I mean, everybody's just been very gracious and very helpful, and it's just been a wonderful time, and I couldn't have done it without all the advice of everybody that's helped.
Yeah, it's nice. The racetrack's like a family, and people are oftentimes very willing to, you know, go the extra mile for somebody new, or explain the ropes if somebody doesn't know something. I think you would really enjoy that trainer talk with Mick Ruiz, because he talks a lot about that and about asking a lot of questions of trainers, and he says, you know, he doesn't mind asking, a guy like Wayne Lucas or Bob Baffert or somebody like that about a horse, because he doesn't know. If he doesn't know something, he wants to talk to somebody who does, and I think that's important. And you guys have so many things in common, because you train your own horses, and you're new at the game, but you're trying to operate at a high level, and it's a very interesting comparison between the two of you. You know, he's on the big circuit in California, and you're at Turfway Park, but there's a lot of similarities between the two of you.
Sorry, I'm a little speechless. It's just been great. Even like I said, we call it beating the ambulance. As long as the horse isn't on the ambulance, even when we come in last, it's a learning experience, and it's still something that I've got there. I got improvements. I mean, there's always improvements in everything that you do in life, but I got there. I got a horse on the track, and he ran home instead of riding back on a horse ambulance. So.
Yeah, well said. She is Tina Chamberlain. She has been a delightful guest over the course of this hour-long program here tonight. Trainer Talk presented by Phasic Tipton. Don't forget, next week we'll head to a brand new XM channel. It'll be XM channel 201 as opposed to 206, which you're listening to now. And that channel change begins with all of our shows tomorrow with Express Bet Radio at 3 o'clock Eastern. So make a note of that, our new home, XM 201. Of course, Sirius 219 remains the same for those of you listening on Sirius satellite radio. And yeah, you can always stream us and see a complete schedule and Sirius XM information on our website, horseracingradio.net. And a podcast of this program will be available on our website as well. Tina, it has been just so enjoyable to hear your story. Again, thank you so much for your service to our country and to your husband, Todd, as well. And we want to wish you guys all the best moving forward, and good luck tomorrow night at Turfway.
Thank you very much, and thank you for your time.
All right, Tina Chamberlain. Wow. Awesome stuff, huh?
Yeah, that's cool.
And you're right about Mick Ruiz. I thought about that a couple of times throughout the program tonight. Yeah. There are several similarities with their stories.
Right. It's just, a whole different venue that they're operating at, but the same problems trainers have at Santa Anita, they have at Turfway Park and vice versa.
Just wait till Tina gets a horse like Bolt Doro when she's on her way to the Kentucky Derby. We'll catch up with her again at that point.
We'd probably have to have a medical person with her at all times.
Yeah, I would imagine so. Well, a great show here tonight. Really enjoyed it. We hope you did too. Thanks for being with us. For our producer, Lee Della Pina, for Jude Feld, I'm Mike Penna. We'll talk to you next week on Trainer Talk, presented by Phasic Tipton.